This morning, the first of our interviews with the people who would be Prime Minister after Saturday's election. Tomorrow, the Labour Party leader, Jacinda Ardern. Today, the leader of the National Party, Judith Collins. Ms Collins, the MP for Papakura, entered Parliament in 2002. She's a former Minister of Justice, Corrections, Police and Revenue. She became the leader of the National Party following the resignation of Todd Muller in July. Ms Collins, good morning. Welcome to 9 to Noon.
Good morning, Catherine.
Why should the National Party leader by you become the government? Sum up your case.
Well, because we have the best economic plan to grow the economy. It is very important that we realise that we are going through very difficult economic times as a country. We have the Reserve Bank saying we're facing the worst economic times in 160 years, and we have a plan to not only to get more money back into people's pockets in terms of tax relief, but also to grow infrastructure, to grow the tech sector, to be able to get people into jobs, particularly with some of our policies around jobs. We have a plan to get there, and we need to grow our way out of a recession.
What would you do differently from the government this term when it comes to managing the COVID response?
Well, I think for a start, we would have the Border Protection Agency in place. I think the first thing that the government did, the first lockdown, people supported it. The second lockdown was unnecessary if the border protection policies and promises were in fact being conducted. So we would be testing border-facing staff, but also we would test people before they got on a plane to come to New Zealand. We would also have a contribution for cost for those coming into New Zealand. It's also important that we have a plan to open up the economy as much as we can safely. So that's around international students, high-end international tourists, but also specialist staff in agriculture, horticulture, other industries.
So let's look at that. What would a border control agency do differently from what's happening?
Well, we have one minister in charge, which would be helpful, but also we would have an agency that is in charge of all of those others who are working for it. For instance, at the moment we have some defence staff, we have some police staff, we have some health staff all working there, but there is not one particular plan. And we can see how bad it's been when we've gone from having the Minister of Health in charge to the Minister of Housing in charge to now having Jacinda Ardern has had to bring in Heather Simpson and Brian Roach from Helen Clark's days.
It's not sounding radically different, however.
Well, it is. It's because it actually has a plan. It has some people in charge, but also having a very realistic view about how we can bring people back into New Zealand.
Would you privatise the management of isolation facilities to enable more people to come in?
Well, it's not a matter of privatising. It already is in many ways privatised. And you can see it through.
Would you outsource it? Would you say to universities or schools, you satisfy us that you can manage isolation and we will let you bring people in?
Oh, well, I think it's important to do that, but we'd have to do it on the basis that they were subject to Ministry of Health guidelines and checks, and we would have to have things like COVID tracing apps and things like that operating. So it would have to be at a same or better standard than what there is at the moment.
Could it be, with 4,000 staff around 30 isolation facilities at the moment, could you expand the number of providers, expand the number of people coming in and really say there would be less risk?
Yes, absolutely, because number one, no one's going to get on a plane to New Zealand without a negative COVID test. That's going to help. But the other thing is too, because all the COVID that's coming in is coming through those plane flights. It's not coming anywhere else.
All right, let's look at your government's approach, where you to lead it, to increasing access across the border. What is the plan?
Well, the plan is to make sure that once we got into government, getting this border agency set up, but actually enabling some of these, for instance, international students, particularly at the graduate end, to be able to come into New Zealand. I see that the other day the government has said, oh, well, now they're thinking about doing that. So they are thinking about it too. The fact is we cannot simply shut off our universities from overseas students. We can't shut off everything and then wonder why we won't have an industry at all.
Okay, so how far, how fast, how do you change the policy from what it is now, which is a gradual opening up as isolation facilities allow?
Well, if we have more isolation facilities, such as those providers of accommodation who can actually do it. Look, to be frank, all of our isolation facilities at the moment are simply private hotels and motels. I mean, that's
yes,
what
but they're
they
being
are
run under a centralised structure. What I'm asking you is, would you say to the University of Victoria, which has said we can do this, or to some of the private schools that have said we can do this, yes, we will contract out to you the responsibility for isolation of students you are bringing in?
We will contract to them the accommodation and some responsibility, but the Ministry of Health would have to be checking, and we would have to have it absolutely to the standard what we're currently getting in hotels, and that are already being run. I mean, there are no government-owned managed isolation facilities, are there? They're all hotels.
Yes, but there's 30, as I said, with 4,000 staff. You want a more diverse...
We can't continue down this path without being able to have some more isolation facilities. We cannot do this. Our international students will not... They're not going to be with us.
Are you pledging to a return to full open access to international students by the start of next year?
Of course not.
With the PhD students at 250 at the moment, the plan is, how many more do you believe you could bring in, say, by the start of next year?
I'm not putting a number on it, because that Border Protection Agency would have to make sure that they were absolutely confident in it. And it's really important that we understand, is our institutions, our education institutions need their whole financial case, but also their standing in the world requires them to be able to have some international students. And right at the moment, those students are looking to other countries like Australia. We're not going to just lose 1 year's worth of students. We're going to lose decades of students if we don't sort it.
You've mentioned the economic recovery. You've said this is the priority, the bullet points, please, of what, again, you would do differently from what's happening with the incumbent.
First off, instantly, we would have in some tax relief for average earners. So that would be up to around $3,000 back into people's pockets. That's really important. Why? Because they spend that money. And that money, by spending that money, that keeps other people in work. We have... So that's one part of it. Secondly, to be able to actually start the infrastructure projects that we need. So part of that is doing mass consentings for housing and for infrastructure projects so that we can actually legislate them through. The other thing is taking out the RMA and putting in place legislation around the environment, but also around development. That will take some time, but that's why I think it will be in the first term, but the main thing is we could do mass consenting. So right now, there is no reason at all for councils to plan ahead and say exactly what parts of land or what land is going to be opened up. We need to make that happen. 30-year plans from council saying this is what's going to be, and zone it. That will encourage people to stop land banking and get houses built.
Are you conceding it will take the best part of a first term to repeal and replace the RMA?
Oh, it takes no time to repeal it, but we do need to have something in place.
So two years?
I would say it has to be within that time. But I've already worked on it. I've spent quite a lot of time getting transitional legislation ready to go. And in the meantime, we can do some mass consenting.
Can we look at some things in part by part? Mm-hmm. What is the purpose of having a temporary tax cut?
Oh, an absolute economic stimulus into the economy, put money into people's pockets who will spend it. Much better to trust New Zealanders to get out and do that. And the other thing is that will keep small businesses operational. We have, up and down the country, businesses shutting.
Here's the thing. Your tax breaks pay the most to the people on the most. $8 if you're earning up to $40,000, $8 a week, $58 a week if you're earning $90,000. If this is genuinely a stimulus, if you want every dollar spent, why didn't you target something at those earning the least?
It is very important to understand that an average income at the moment is about $63,000, $64,000 a year. Those people will get the biggest increase in terms of percentage to what they have now, because they will be getting $3,000 in their
pocket. Why does someone on a middle income need or deserve the extra cash more than someone earning less, especially in the current economic environment?
Because almost everyone on that middle income is working full time, and they don't have any other mechanism.
There are people earning up to $40,000 who are working more than one job.
Well, that may well be true, but it is important that we can't give these to everybody, and that's why it is important that we've targeted middle-income people who are in work and who are currently working full-time. That's who's going to get the most benefit out of it.
I want to come back to the infrastructure stuff, but can we talk about those who are working full-time? Can we talk about the cost challenges facing people at the moment? How do you intend to deal with the social impacts of higher unemployment, including on housing costs?
Well, the housing costs at the moment are still going up 27% in the last 3 years under this government.
Come to housing, but how will you deal with those social impacts?
Well, you've got to get housing built. It's what I said before, mass consenting of housing developments. We did it after
Christchurch.
2 years to entirely replace the RMA. But before that, I said mass consenting. We'll legislate through consents for developments. But well before we have to change the RMA, we already have the legislation in place.
So what will you say to councils? You've told them they've got to open up how much new land over the next 30 years?
They've got to have a plan for 30 years of land.
By when?
Well, they have to have it in the first, year.
And that plan, does it include who pays for infrastructure, who pays for three water services, who pays for roads, who pays for connections to motorways?
And that's going to have to be that. They have to think that out. But the other thing too is, Catherine, is we did this post-Christchurch. So Christchurch and Kaikoura, we had houses totaled, as you know, thousands of houses totaled. And what we did is did mass consenting of developments. What happened in Christchurch? We got houses built. That's what we need to do.
Can we come back to the social impacts? Do you acknowledge
and
that
those
there
houses
will be? Do you acknowledge there will be, with unemployment set to peak at 7.8% and to stay in the sevens for some for a couple of years, 2 to 3 years, do you accept there will be real social impacts of the situation, and how will you deal with those social impacts? With the spending you're making targeting middle-income earners, how will you deal with the social impacts?
Well, Catherine, we don't accept a 7% unemployment rate if we are growing the economy from day one. The people who are getting $64,000 a year are not rich. They are simply paying their bills. But they're simply paying their bills. And those people will spend the money. They're not the top end of town. They're actually.
But I'm asking you about the social consequences. Let's look at
the social consequences of unemployment are huge.
So how are you going to deal with them? Let's look at social housing.
Well, I'm trying to answer.
Okay. Well, we were talking about other matters. You've seen the number of states and the number of people on the state house raising list quadruple under this term of government.
Yes, shocking.
Do you accept in part that was because you sold more state houses than you built?
No, that is total rubbish. Because I'm telling you right now, if that was the problem, then they would have been on state house waiting list before we left office. What has happened is that, yes, some houses were sold. Yes, some were being built. But the 5,000 houses in the state house area that have been built since this government came in, they were all in the pipeline being built or about to be built, all funded, all planned.
You were in government for 9 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You sold more than you built. You've conceded that was a mistake in previous
interviews. Well, I think that we should have got them built faster. If we'd got to been able to get around the RMA, we would have. But the thing is that we know how to do it now, and that is to do these mass consentings. And as for social housing, how can Labor ever say they've got any record except to have 5,000 people on a state house waiting list to now 20,000?
I will be talking to them tomorrow.
I will be talking to them about that tomorrow.
But you have conceded in the past that what happened with social housing and the government you were part of for 9 years was a mistake. Do you concede that today?
I have said that we should have had more housing built faster to be able to deal with the fact that we were bowling some really old, dreadful housing that needed to be bowled, but we should have done it faster.
In Auckland, median house price is 9 times the median household income. Increasingly, other parts of the country are catching up close to that. The nationwide figure is nudging 7 times. Do house prices need to fall?
I'm not going to say they need to fall. I am saying that we need to have more houses. We need this is a supply issue, and that is primarily around the RMA. I know some people don't want to believe it, but actually before the RMA came into play, house prices were around 3 times the average salary, and now it's 9, 10, whatever. And that is exactly what
the RMA replaced about 70 or 80 acts of Parliament, we should say. Both parties are saying it's going to change now.
Yeah.
I want to come back to it further. Mm-hmm. You focus on the supply side when it comes to housing, which the previous three-term Labor and three-term National governments also talked about, while supply fell further relative to demand. But on the demand side, you refuse to contemplate taxes to disincentivise speculation or ban foreign buyers. Your policy is to cut the bright line test back, to loosen restrictions on foreign buyers in the housing market, and to get rid of ring fencing of rental losses for investors. Isn't that just pouring rocket fuel on the housing problem?
Not at all. It's actually incentivising people to build houses for tenants. That's really important because we have this massive increase in rental prices under this government. It's gone increased by about $50 a week for the average renter, and we are finding a real problem with supply. But the other thing is the foreign buyers that we're talking about, that's only if people come in to build housing for new people, for more people. Okay. That's not just come in and buy an existing house.
And why get rid of ring fencing, which at least helps disincentivise speculation and an ever-growing presence of investors in the market versus first home buyers? Why do that? The law's been passed. Why undo it?
Because investors also provide housing in the private sector.
They do. Their assets are ballooning, their rental charges are ballooning, and their interest rates are at record low levels. Why incentivise them rather than assist the tenants in some way?
We are assisting the tenants by getting more housing available means tenants have more choice. That's the issue.
Well, accommodation allowance is going to increase under you to help with what's happened to rents?
Well, it's already increased under the current people, isn't it?
Will you look at that side?
Well, obviously, if it's needed, but I don't believe it's going to be needed, because if we can get enough housing built in the private sector and the state sector and the community housing sector, you won't have the problem we've got at the moment of rents just spiralling out of control under the current government.
Section 6 of the RMA has always been about environmental concerns holding equal weight with economic concerns. Will that balance go under National? Will the economic factors hold priority over environmental concerns?
The Act will be replaced by two different Acts. One will be environmental standards and the other one will be about development
and
getting things done.
Which will be predominant when there's a clash? Will the economic needs be superior to the environmental concerns?
Do you know what? When the environmental needs were brought in under the RMA, it was actually about the environment. At the moment, the environmental needs have been expanded to mean all sorts of things that have nothing to do with the environment. It is really important. Do we want people housed or not? Do you know what, Catherine? I'm sick and tired of listening to people bang on to me how they want people housed and they're not prepared to get out and get people housed.
So that's a slightly different matter.
That's housing built. That's NIMBYism.
However, when it comes to Section 6 of that RMA, that always kept a balance between environment...
But it hasn't, though. It hasn't. What we've seen is, over the years, 30 years of judge-made laws in terms of decisions on things and people using positions of strength to stop any competition. Tell you, Catherine, when I've seen developers who have used the RMA to stop other developers building houses because they don't want competition, no, it's time it went. And every party understands that.
I'm trying to get clear whether the environmental aspects
I've said
of
the environmental will be protected.
Will they be on the same level?
Yeah, because it's the environmental. We'll have an Environmental Standards Act, which will be very, obviously, utterly relevant. But tell you what, we won't allow to be done. I will not allow people to stop other people building houses just because they don't want any competition to their own houses being built, or supermarkets stopping other supermarkets from coming in because they don't want competition. We have seen the RMA become a block to progress when it should be an enhancer of progress.
Judith Collins is my guest. She's the leader of the National Party. You're listening to 9 to Noon on RNZ National. Well, let's look about other pressures on the housing market, actually, and it also relates to National's record on economic growth. Will immigration return to the levels it was pre-COVID if you have your way?
Well, I don't think it will do. I mean, Ms. Ardern promised the last election they were going to get immigration down to by about 10,000, and it went up to about, what is they go
There's
up to about 80,000?
There's going to be a lot of demand to move to this country. There is already, and when you open those borders, as early as you say you want to, there's going to be a lot of people coming to live here. Will you countenance immigration getting up to the levels it was, 70,000 plus net a year?
Well, it was 80,000 under Labor.
Yeah. But so, I'm asking you...
We won't be doing that. We have to have infrastructure.
Let me tell you
where immigration's going to be. It's going to be focused on people who are going to add value to New Zealand. This is not about New Zealand adding value to people. It's about people who want to come and add value. And that will be, yes, there will be highly qualified, highly resourced people in the tech sector who will be able to come into New Zealand as entrepreneurs only if they are bringing money in and are able to create jobs for New Zealanders, highly paid jobs.
A lot of people need low-income jobs such as the rest homes, working on farms as labourers, pickers. These are the people crying out. And now, that, are you going to open the doors again and let...
Well, if only you'd let me finish, okay, Catherine. Well, thank you. And, of course, we need specialist skills. So we have people who are working in agriculture, in horticulture, in the rest homes. Yes, of course we will have these people come in. Why? Because they can do the job. Secondly, they know what they want to work. So yes, but it's always got to be about the needs for New Zealand.
So where and you the cap, other thing where it you can't do it, and where do you believe it would need to be capped?
When we know, for a start, we have to be able to house people. That is important, and we need the infrastructure built. So we need the roads, we need the water, we need all these things built. We can't just do that, open up borders and let people come racing in without that housing built.
So you're saying there would be limits?
Well, of course. Okay. Every government has some limits.
Yeah. Well, the question is whether the limit is 80,000 or whether the limit is 20,000.
Oh, let's put it this way. We were told it was going to be, what, about 10,000? Turned out to be 80,000.
Talking to you tomorrow. The reason I ask is that you talk about National being the better party to run the economic recovery. Headline growth under the last National government was driven significantly by immigration. GDP per capita only hit 2% in two of the years you were in power in those three terms. And actually, once we got to 2013... The gap between them gets bigger and bigger. Underlying economic growth performance was not that strong.
We should have had the RMA reform that we want to do now. And the reason we couldn't get it is because the Labor Party would not support any changes. If they had supported us in RMA reform and the way that we wanted to do it, we would have been able to get that. That is all about productivity. We can't grow productivity without education being far, let's say, better in terms of its outcomes for young people, but also, Catherine, we need to use our tech sector. So when we look at productivity, one of the best things we ever did was to put in the ultra-fast broadband and roll that out. It still needs to be completed. We've had another 3 years. It still needs to be... Yeah. That will help.
Let's talk about that infrastructure. Roads, there are ambitious plans, $31 billion of them. Some have said heroically ambitious on both costs and timing. How will you fund this and actually fund the bits you haven't put a dollar next to yet, like drilling tunnels through the Kaimai Ranges?
Well, we have to fund it through a combination of both the land transport fund, which is the fuel taxes that people pay, but it's also about certain borrowing, which we've also put into our fiscal plan. Obviously, the country is going to have to borrow for infrastructure. Both major parties acknowledge that. But part of that borrowing has to be that we want to borrow to build infrastructure. Why? Because we want to build productivity.
Okay. Can I ask you about that borrowing? Mm-hmm. Will it be off books with respect to the fact that it will not count against your net core Crown debt target?
No, we're actually counting it, even though some of it would be through the Land Transport Agency. And we've also said that in terms of Housing New Zealand, or Kāinga Ora as it's called now, the current government has been borrowing off books for that. We would continue that, but we would actually be putting those numbers into the fiscal plan, which we have put
in. The new infrastructure body that you're setting up, would its borrowing count against your debt target or not?
Well, the thing is, we've said it would do, so we've made that very plain, but the infrastructure bank will not just be borrowing, it will also be putting together investment deals for the private sector and others. So, for instance, we have funds right now, like the superannuation fund and also ACC, and there are overseas pension funds as well. We're saying, let's put something together, which is not a government... not just some government department, it's actually an infrastructure bank to be an investment bank for these projects.
You are telling me, though, that any borrowing it does and any borrowing that is done by NZTA will count against your net core Crown debt target?
Well, of course, we'll be putting it out there. But
it won't. That's a different thing.
No. I'm talking about an investment banking doesn't just go around borrowing money. What it does is it puts together people who do have the money, or the businesses or the super funds or whatever, pension funds, and it puts them into a package. That's not a borrowing that would be covered, but it is very important that that's not what investment banks do.
So is that borrowing that you intend to do for the likes of the roading and the new infrastructure going to be counted as part of your net core Crown debt target of 36% or not by 2035?
It's exactly as it is on our fiscal plan. So there will be some things. So investment bank doesn't borrow as such. It's more like packages up other people's money and puts it into a project so that we have the funding without the government actually borrowing it. not quite the same.
Right. Let's talk about how tight that fiscal plan is. $800 million new spending in the first year, 2021, $700 million of new spending left in 2022. Mm. It's been pointed out many times, National and Labor governments have both spent that much just topping up the health budget each year. Are there going to be cuts in real terms under such a stringent budget?
We're not planning any cuts, and this is 36% of GDP by 2034 is where we think we can get.
But your first 2 years, you've left yourself a tiny amount of fiscal spending relative to the last 18 years of government spending on health. Mm. Are there going to be cuts in real terms?
We don't believe there needs to be. What we do believe is we need to have is obviously discipline in spending. And what we've seen as well is that we are going through, according to the Reserve Bank, the worst economic times in 160 years. We need to look at what we need to fund, fine. But understand we have to grow the economy so that we will get the income in. Whether that's the tech sector, whether that's more in terms of exports.
We're talking about the first 2 years of your fiscal plan. It starts, you know, next year.
Well, we've made it very plain.
And people see it as impossibly tight. And will you concede there may be cuts in real terms if you do not increase the amount of spending?
I don't concede it at all. I concede this, is that it's going to be a very difficult time economically for this country. And everyone understands that you can't simply have no plan to get back to a reasonable level of debt. And we have a plan to get back to a reasonable level of debt. It's not as good as we'd like it to be. But the fact is we do need to make sure we keep those services going and we need to fund them. How can you even
virtually
talk about, you
know, every we've got 200... single district health board is in deficit. The Canterbury different...
You mean under the current government, yeah?
Yes, it is. So, but what are you going to do about that when you have got such a tight fiscal budget set for everything, let alone health next year?
Well, for instance, we have already got funding in there. We've taken funding for capital items, so actually doing the
operational
hospital.
Spending.
Yeah, I know, but that will help. In terms of, say, the fiscal issues with Canterbury District Health Board, quite a lot of that is actually on the capital charge. It's actually on the fact that the building has been operating, or not operating when
it's
just been built.
Did National get that wrong? And the way it funded the replacement of buildings destroyed by an earthquake, did it saddle that district health board with the problems it's got now? Because that's what it says you did.
Well, I don't think they've said that at all.
That's what the doctors say.
No, actually, I think the doctors have said that at least we were, you know, talking to them. We didn't do what they did, and we didn't have
the position
a whole mess
of many senior clinicians and the union, the senior medical doctors union, representing the senior doctors, is that the way that rebuild was funded is what has caused their debt.
Look, it's just been written off, so it becomes a moot point, doesn't it?
Would you write it off if you became Prime Minister on Saturday night?
Well, it's already been written off, so it's a moot point. Why would you even talk about it? We've already said that we, you know, obviously it's already been written off. The government's already written off. It wasn't anywhere near the debt when we left office. It was something like about $50 million, and now it's, what, 185?
And
come
they blame the delays in a rebuild of the hospital part for that. Let's move on. You've said that New Zealand could be the Norway of the South Pacific. What did you mean?
Well, for instance, we have a massive field of hydrocarbons, which all the seismic testing tells us, in particular the geologists who are involved in this area, to have natural gas reserves that could well be like the North Sea. Now, I'm not a geologist, but I have been the Minister of Energy and Resources. I have seen the seismic testing. Norway is a country that has, it is the second biggest user of renewable energy in the world. We're the third. It has been able to build an incredible wealth base and a very, very solid social services and structure around the fact that they have been the sixth biggest exporter of oil and gas
in the world. So are you saying oil and gas, exploration, open slather, you're welcome?
How can you even get to that?
Which is it?
I mean,
well,
honestly,
we've got an oil and gas gain in Taranaki right now. I presume that.
Well, it's an oil and gas exploration. We'll get rid of that.
Okay. But are you saying this is a strategic and core part of your economic plan to encourage this industry?
I didn't say that, but you raised it. So you've raised it with me. You've asked me what I meant. Well, do we want to have a country where we can actually eliminate child poverty?
So is that
do you actually want to have that?
So is that a yes? I mean, no judgment.
Gas,
yes or no?
Natural gas is, as opposed to oil. I think there's a lot of oil in the world. I mean, you may well remember there was going to be peak oil and it was all going to be not enough oil. Well, there's so much oil. It's not that. That's not the
So
end,
are you differentiating
natural
between natural
Absolutely.
Gas and oil
Absolutely.
Exploration?
Absolutely. Right. Natural gas is entirely different
what
in terms of...
What will you do
it.
About applications for new exploration for oil, however? That's back on.
What do you know, I don't think anyone's going to come. Okay. You know why? Because they've seen a fruit loopy decision from the current government without any notice and no policy put around it. And actually, we've just lost, what was it, about 3,000 jobs out of Taranaki, out of it, high-paying
but
jobs.
But are you going to encourage them back? Well, incentivise them back?
You know what? No, they're not going to come back.
Can we ask
not fast, anyway.
Can we ask about your party's position on climate change policy and specifically the Zero Carbon Act? You've said you would change it to assist farmers and growers. Mm-hmm. What would go from that act? What would stay in the first instance?
There are nine areas, which I haven't got, obviously, with me today, but you've seen us. We've campaigned on that. We've said very clearly when we voted for the Zero Carbon Act that we would want these changes made. One of them is around the fact is that we need to recognise that New Zealand growers of food are some of the most sustainable growers in the world. You know, I heard Miss Ardern say the other night that, people are just going to want to buy New Zealand meat if we have a clean green image on it. Right now, last night I was hearing from farmers that actually China, for instance, is now buying a lot of their meat out of Brazil and Argentina. Why? Because it's cheaper.
So you're talking about things like nitrate limits and some of those limits that were being introduced?
You can't have them for, you cannot logistically have them for the whole country, one particular standard. Why? Because every part of this country is different.
Fundamentally,
so it needs to be
do
regional.
You support, though, which you did in government, support the Zero Carbon Act, the Climate Change Commission being
yeah,
in
course.
Place, it's going to start reporting its
yeah,
budgets
absolutely.
Next
we're
year.
We're perfectly happy with
its
that.
Its budgets may well come in saying that we're missing by a mile our 2030 target and may have to start paying
Well, we don't know that. That's
credits.
Hypothetical.
It's hypothetical, but there's a very good chance.
But we
but
also
that's
signed
be the
up.
Case.
Look, I was part of government that signed up to the Paris Agreements. That Paris Agreement had a provision in it that seems to be regularly ignored by many people. And that provision is that we would not do anything that would actually limit our ability to produce food. That is very clear. Why? Because you know what, Catherine? We can talk all we like, but actually we need to be able to understand where money comes from.
So are you saying that if we miss our targets, what, a government under yours would...
No, it's just I'm telling you it's hypothetical and you're just making up scenarios that aren't there.
You may hear them very early next year, actually, when the first reporting comes. But are you saying that if it's a choice between our economic needs and our commitments under Paris, you would miss the targets and what, buy the units we'd have to buy? Or
I want to make this really clear. I'm not going to talk about hypotheticals that haven't happened.
But you want to be Prime Minister as of next month and this reporting
well,
will happen
I'll tell
early
you what,
next year.
I've made it very clear. You haven't seen the report. You don't know what's in it and you're just guessing and I'm not going to
All
respond
right.
to it. I just think that's ridiculous.
Just a minute or two to go, you've talked about having a strong team to rebuild the economy. You've actually lost through retirement about a third of your caucus and some of your most senior ministers. Is your caucus ready to become the government?
Well, it is actually. When you look at the members that we've got of our caucus who have been ministers in the past, absolutely, when you look at that, and you look at the strength of the people coming in as well. You know, obviously, they'll need to be in there a little while but before they take on ministerial roles, but there are some highly qualified, very, very good people coming through.
Finally, if you were dependent on ACT, and just looking at where the polls have been heading, if you were dependent on ACT, what will you rule out of its... wish list that's manifesto. For example, massive cuts to income tax, to GST, something close to $40 billion worth over a decade.
Well, it's simply not plausible for us to do that. Look, you could say that we could be dependent on ACT, but I'd say this to you, they'd be dependent on us. Their only path to getting any influence in the government is through us. So we're also a party that has in the past turned down the opportunity to be in government, as we did last time, because we were not prepared to give in to every woman wish of Winston Peters.
So some of those tax and cuts and spending, what about repeal of the new gun laws?
Well, we didn't agree with the second tranche of laws. So, those ones would be gone, but the first one, yes, we did. We did agree with that.
So the second tranche being the gun register, that would go under you?
Look, the gun register is something I looked at significantly when I was Minister of Police in two terms. It simply doesn't work it doesn't work anywhere, and it is immensely expensive. We're spending a lot of time going around making law-abiding people feel that they're criminals when we have criminals actually getting away with having guns.
I thank you very much for your time this morning. Thank you for coming in and all the best for Saturday night.
Yes, thank you, Catherine.
Judith Collins is the leader of the National Party. Tomorrow at the same time, we will interview the leader of the Labor Party, Jacinda Ardern.